हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम टू श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ टेम्पल। टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम 10th कैंटो, wherein it is explained that hearing and chanting the names, the qualities, the pastimes, glories of Lord Krishna is the most powerful and perfect medicine to cure us from the very disease that is the source of all suffering, material illusion. That illusion where we forget that we are eternally a part of Krishna. We are eternal servants of Krishna. That our true nature is to taste forever ecstatic love for Krishna. That love for Krishna is experienced to the extent that we have no selfish desires. Samsudhir Hari Toshana. That our life, our soul, our body, our mind, our words are all dedicated to giving pleasure to Krishna. That is the true meaning of being a servant. That service is most pleasing to Krishna within this material world when we inspire others to love Krishna. Because Krishna is Karuna Sindhu. He's a limitless ocean of mercy. Karuna is compassion. Krishna is the father, the mother, Aham Bija, of all living beings. He feels compassion for everyone. Therefore, he situates himself as the Paramatma, personally seated in the heart of every living being, eagerly waiting for that person to turn to him for direction, for service. Krishna manifests as the spiritual masters, as the Vaishnavas, as the scriptures. To help us to hear the voice of the Paramatma, the Lord within our hearts. And Krishna personally descends into this world for that purpose. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanirbhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Age after age, Krishna, who is so merciful, descends from the spiritual world where he is the supreme enjoyer with his limitless devotees. Krishna's Rasa Bihari, as Gopinath, is forever enjoying transcendental pastimes in the spiritual world of Goloka, far beyond this material existence, within the spiritual sky. Krishna's eternal residence with Sri Radha and all of the associates of Krishna who are forever happy because they're all sharing Krishna with each other. when we put Krishna in the center of our life, when we put Krishna in the center of our relationships, then we can actually experience Krishna. Otherwise, it's only an imagination. That's the very essence of tapasya. Our acharyas teach true tapasya is not just to what extent we could fast or give up sleep, renounce possessions. All of these things are meant to help us to put Krishna in the center of our life. But what that means is we have to take our own selfish desires out of the center of our life. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, proprietor, and controller of everything that exists forever. When we put our will, when we think I am the knower, then we're putting ourselves in Krishna's place. Why is that a problem? Because it's artificial. It's superficial. It's simply an illusion. In that state, under the influence of the ahankar, the false ego, we think I am this body and I am the proprietor of whatever is in connection to this body. I and mine. Therefore, we're desperately trying to find the nature of our soul, the ecstasy of love of Krishna, in the temporary fleeting things of this world. And in the process, we become so frustrated. We come under the influence of lust and then anger. We become envious, greedy, arrogant. This desperate need to think I'm great and filled with illusion. As we actually begin to taste the sweetness of bhakti, we see these things for what they are. They're petty, they're insignificant, and according to Gita, dukalayam ashashvatam, there are all sources of misery. At our Bhaktivedanta hospital, when somebody comes with a very, very dangerous terminal disease, if that person starts boasting to others, just see my disease. My disease is more acute than your disease. I have malaria. And you have malaria, your temperature is only 102. My temperature is 104. Does that sound ridiculous? That's material life. I have more money, I have more power, I have more fame, I have more prestige. I'm getting more sensual enjoyment than you. Everyone's competing to increase their temperature more than others. Thinking that's what happiness is. That's illusion. A devotee sees it as an illusion. We don't want to increase this disease that's killing the very nature of the soul. We want to take medicine that's going to cure us of the disease. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself came to this world. Enechi asadi maya nashi boralagi harina mahamantra lao tumi magi. I have the medicine that will cure your disease. Remember Krishna. And it's so easy. Chant his holy names. I was recently listening to a recorded lecture of Srila Prabhupada. And he was talking about opening hospitals. It was spoken in 1976 during a Srimad Bhagavatam class to the whole of ISKCON in Mayapur Dham during the festival at Gaur Purnima. Srila Prabhupada said, to open hospital is all right if we make people Krishna conscious. If we understand that the real disease that people are having, and he was explaining how our devotees are going to hospitals, and by giving, people are reading our books and hearing the holy names, and they are becoming Krishna conscious as their temporary disease is being treated, the real disease of the heart is being cured. Bhaktivedanta Hospital, its principal aim is to cure people from ever taking birth again in this material world. And everything else is helping to harmonize that facility. In today's verse, we are reading how the medicine that is the greatest need within this world today for the real disease that people are suffering of illusion, ignorance, forgetfulness, the cause of all suffering, the cause of the illusion of death, is to hear and chant the glorification of the Supreme Lord. So when Krishna comes to this world, as he explains in Bhagavad Gita, he comes to annihilate the asuras, the miscreants, to protect the pious, and to reestablish the true principles of religion. Yuge, yuge. He comes again and again for this purpose. And there are many avatars. Srimad Bhagavatam declares that within this ocean of material existence, the Lord comes again and again in so many avatars. But once in a day of Brahma, that's once in over 8 billion years, the Supreme Lord personally comes in his original transcendental complete form of Krishna. He comes in this particular avatar. And he fulfills the purpose of all other avatars. Every day in Vrindavan, he's killing demons. In Mathura, in Dwarka. Incredible. He's protecting the pious. He speaks Bhagavad Gita to reestablish the true principles of Dharma. But in this particular avatar, which is so rare and so special, he performs his pastimes in Vrindavan to attract our hearts. The very name Krishna means all attractive. Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shaktis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed that, my Lord, you have many names. Srila Prabhupada Acharya has explained that Krishna is none different than all of his true names. But the name Krishna is very central within the Vedic literatures because it includes all other names. All the greatness, all the qualities of the Supreme Absolute Truth together make him all attractive. He's powerful, beautiful, all-knowing, the creator, the maintainer, the annihilator of everything. But the quality that is above all others is that he's all attractive. He's the supreme object of every soul's love. He's the supreme lover from whom all love emanates through his Ladini Shakti Sri Radha. Krishna's pastimes, where the supreme truth shows the most intimate of all secrets, how he is controlled by the love of his devotee, how he makes himself subordinate to the love of his devotee. When Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, there was the residence of Vrindavan, of Mathura, of Dwarka. But he established his pastimes through the mouth of Shukadeva Goswami and other such great sages and rishis, through Vedavyas, the compiler of Vedic literatures, and through the hearts of great souls like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Gopal Bhatt Goswami, Raghunath Bhatt Goswami. He has revealed his pastimes to the world. And those pastimes are forever. Krishna is so merciful. The spirit soul, the jivatma, is 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair within when the spirit soul comes under material captivation. But how that little particle, which is not even material at all, has so much potency. Just look at the city of Bombay. You know, just these little jivatmas have built this whole city. And they're building bombs and they're building science and so many things. They're so small. But Krishna, the source of everything. Krishna is like the sun planet. The jivatma is like a tiny little individual sun ray. Yet Krishna makes himself subordinate to the love and the devotion of his devotee. That is Vrindavan. And it has been revealed for all time. If Krishna can perform so many incredible, inconceivable activities that we could sensually perceive right in this universe around us and within us, Krishna could do anything. And one of the things he does is he is personally present with all of his potencies, with all of his beauty, with all of his sweetness, within the transcendental sound vibration of his holy names. And also, he enacts his pastimes through the sound vibration of those pastimes. When we read Krishna's Leelas, when we hear about them from authorized sources in Parampara, then Krishna's present. To the degree we become absorbed with a pure heart, we're actually in that pastime. At the same time, our hearts become purified simply by hearing those pastimes with a sincere intent. Yayatamam prapadyante tams tathaiva pajamyaham. As we surrender to Krishna, Krishna reveals himself accordingly. We may not be so pure, we may not be so advanced, but at whatever level we're on, surrender means we're sincerely trying. We're sincerely trying to put our false ego aside and be the servant of the servant of the servant. We're sincerely trying to put the order, Yasya Prasada, Bhagavat Prasada, of our spiritual masters, of Srila Prabhupada, of his representatives, of the previous acharyas. We're trying to put their order as our life and soul, above the whims of our mind, above the dictations of our senses. If we're honestly, earnestly trying, that's surrender. If we understand that I can't do it, doesn't matter how much I know or how much I could do or how many people I can influence, it's only by the mercy of Krishna that I can overcome this illusion. The Vishwamitra Muni, he was the most powerful king and warrior in the world. And ultimately he was defeated by Vasishta, who was just a simple Brahmin. And then he became a Brahmin, and he became so powerful in his tapasya. He can create a child like fruit in a tree. But ultimately he was defeated again and again until he surrendered. I know nothing. I am nothing. Krishna, save me. So whoever we are, wherever we are, whatever we can do, to surrender means to accept that I'm fallen. Narottam Das Thakur prayed to Lord Chaitanya, you are the deliverer of the most fallen, Patita Pavana. And because I'm the most fallen among all the fallen, please save me too. To the degree we actually think like that, we're making advancement. To surrender to Krishna is to completely take shelter of the higher power of Krishna's grace. Coming through the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Krishna within our heart. And to the degree we actually surrender like that, Krishna reveals himself. When we hear Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking directly to us. When we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we're in Vrindavan, watching Krishna dance on Kaliya. Through sound vibration, we're there, seeing Krishna swallowing a forest fire. When we make advancement to the point that our ego is completely purified and we're totally surrendered to Krishna, and we can actually be a participant in Krishna's lila simply by hearing. Of all the avatars of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna in Vrindavan is most full. All other aspects of, or other, all other incarnations who are none different than Krishna, they reveal only certain of the opulences of Krishna. Krishna Swayam Bhagavan, he reveals all of his opulences in full. How special is Krishna? Vrindavan, there is a place not far from Yamuna River, Bailvan or Bilvavan. Krishna, Balaram, and the Gopas, they would play there because there were trees that had very nice fruits called bale fruits or bilva fruits. And Krishna, of course, Krishna is the source of everything that exists. All everything here is by Krishna's arrangement. But yet, as a cowherd boy with his friends, they want to play with the fruits. So how to get the fruits? Because they're high up in a tree. So Krishna and Balaram, they teach the other gopas how to get the fruits. They take stones and they throw them at the fruit to try to get the fruits to fall. And if somehow or other the fruits are not falling, then they tie the stone with rope and they throw the stone and they do it in such a way that the rope winds around the fruit and then they pull it and the fruit comes down. The fruits are shaped like balls, and they play with those balls. They're playing and playing and playing. So much they're playing. They're playing so happily. So many games, sometimes leaping like frogs, sometimes dancing like peacocks, sometimes jumping like monkeys, sometimes swimming like fish, sometimes pretending to fly like the birds. Sometimes going to the lakes and seeing their reflections and chastising the reflections and laughing at them. Sometimes shouting in a well and then chastising with harsh words the echoes of the well. Having arguments with the echo. Sometimes jumping on each other's shoulders, wrestling. This is the supreme truth. And Krishna is especially fond of losing the match when he wrestles. It's like a father. Father wrestles with a tiny little three-year-old son. The son says, "I'm going to beat you." And the father says, "I'm going to beat you." And they wrestle. If the father wants, he could definitely beat the son within a moment. What pleasure is that? But when the child, father actually is defeated, then the son is so happy. Tells the whole world, "I beat my father." And the father is so happy, he wants to tell the world, "My son beat me." So in the same way, Krishna wrestles with Sridham and Sridham wins. And Krishna has to carry Sridham on his shoulder, which is the official way of proclaiming to the whole society, "I lost. Sridhamavan." That is Vrindavan. So in that same little forest of Bilvavan, where Krishna would perform these wonderful pastimes, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, the supreme eternal consort of Narayan, the supreme truth, who was worshipped in so many temples, who was living forever in Vaikuntha. Narayan's expansion, Mahavishnu, creates the cosmic manifestation. Narayan's expansion of Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, resides as the supersoul within every universe. Chirodakshaya Vishnu, he lives in Svetadvipa, a specific planet in each universe, and is the lord of the heart of every living being and expands himself in the atoms. In this way, he's all pervading. The eternal consort of Narayan, Lakshmi. When she heard from Narada Muni about the pastimes of Krishna. She wanted to enter Krishna's pastimes. She left Vaikuntha because she wanted to enter into the Rasa-lila. Because Lakshmi has conjugal love. She's the Lord's consort. There in Bilvavan, she performed tapasya. Because even Lakshmi can't just enter into Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. You and me were thinking, I'll take the August Kranti train from Mumbai railway station, and then I will go to Mathura. And maybe I'll walk just to show everyone how austere I could be. Or maybe to purify my own life, I'll walk along the bank of Yamuna. Or others may take a rickshaw or a tanga or a taxi. Or some may have a friend who picks them up in a car. And then we enter into Vrindavan and we think, I am in Vrindavan. Physically, you're in Vrindavan. But you can only yeyatamam prabhajyante. The holy dham is an expansion of Krishna, supervised by Brinda Devi, Yogamaya, Balaram, Radharani. According to our consciousness, we can experience Vrindavan, not just by physical proximity. Srila Prabhupada tells us, Akrura, he was praying to Krishna with such intense humility while he was traveling to Vrindavan. When he saw the footprints of Krishna Balaram in the dust of Vrindavan, he fell down and rolled in that dust and was weeping tears, feeling himself so fallen, but so grateful, totally fixing his mind with a grateful heart on Krishna, remembering Krishna, chanting Krishna's names and glories with his tongue and with his heart and mind. That mood of service. He was going exclusively for the service of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada quotes his Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, don't try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in such a way that he is pleased to see you. That's all. Bhakti is that simple. So the dham is Krishna. And we can only experience according to how Krishna in the dham reveals, according to our mood of surrender. So this is a truth we can especially learn from this story. Lakshmi didn't try to just take a taxi to Vrindavan. She doesn't need. Just by her wish, she could be anywhere, everywhere. She's the Ladini Shakti of the Supreme Absolute Personality of Godhead. But to enter into the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, across the Yamuna where he was performing Viras Lila, Lakshmi was willing to leave Vaikuntha, to come to the material world. Material world is a place of so much illusion and so much suffering. And the earth planet. Why would she leave Vaikuntha? The spiritual world eternally. And leave Narayan. Because she wanted to serve Krishna like the gopis serve Krishna. Because Krishna is just so attractive. He's so beautiful. how he plays his flute, Muralidhar, the beauty of his body, Shamsundar, the loving relationships he has with his devotees, Gopinath, the wonderful qualities in Krishna, in his supreme abode of Sri Vrindavan. That was something infinitely beyond what she was even experiencing in Vaikuntha. So Lakshmi performed tapasya for a long time. And she's still there. Because she would not, she's not, by Krishna's own arrangement, it's a lila. For her to enter into the Ras Lila, she would have to leave behind her role as the goddess of fortune. She would have to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. That means milking cows, making cow dung patties. That was even beyond her. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's giving all of us the opportunity for what Lakshmi is praying for. The Panchatattva broke open the storehouse of love of God as the residents of Vrindavan are experienced. They tasted it through kirtan, through chanting, through dancing, through harikatha, through seva. And they're distributing the contents, not considering who is fit or who is unfit, which place is proper or which place is improper. Anyone who's willing to receive with an open heart and follow these simple teachings, follow through our actions, our words, and our intent. Lord Chaitanya, in the mood of Sri Radha, gives that entrance into the holy land of Vrindavan, the spiritual world. Lakshmi is longing for the Vrindavan Leela. And Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he has his own spiritual planet, Sada Shiva, Maheshloka. He's Vishwanath. He's the Lord of the entire universe. Even he, after hearing the pastimes of Krishna and gopis from Yogamaya, he wanted to enter into the Raslila. It's not a cheap thing. It's the most exalted thing. So Yogamaya told him that you should go to Mansarovar. During the Raslila of Sri Krishna, Sri Radharani, for Krishna's pleasure, left the Rasa dance. And Krishna left all gopis to find her. And ultimately Krishna left her. And she went to a particular secluded place. And she cried in angry separation from Krishna and filled that lake with the tears of her love. Lord Shiva went to Mansarovar and he took his bath there. He entered the lake as Mahadev. He came out of the lake as Gopeshwar Mahadev. He had the form of a gopi, a female body. And in this gopi bhava, gopi rupa, he came to the Rasa Lila and Krishna greeted him and gave him the seva,
of guarding the Rasleela.
No one can enter Rasleela unless they are blessed by Lord Shiva in the form of a gopi. And the place where he's standing forever is a temple established by Krishna's great grandson, Vajranabha, of the name Gopeshwar Mahadev Temple. Lord Brahma, during Brahma Vimohan Leela, he tried to trick Krishna to show his powers. And when Krishna, in such an intimate way, incredible. Krishna expanded himself as all the cows and all the calves and all the gopas after Brahma stole them. After a year, Brahma came back and saw that they were still there. He was bewildered. Then Krishna manifested each one of those calves, little calves, and each gopa as Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha with four arms. And around each one was all the demigods, the modes of material nature, all the elements of material nature, all living entities. Brahma was seeing this. Now to bewilder Brahma, no one but Krishna can do it. He was totally bewildered. He was absolutely stunned. And then, when it came to a point beyond limits, his bewilderment, everything disappeared, and there was little Krishna standing with Krishna's surprise, some yogurt and some fruit and rice in his hand. And he looked so innocent. He was looking to try to find his calves and his friends. When Brahma saw that, he completely shut down. His mind went blank. His senses completely blank. He couldn't even see anymore. And then when he came to his senses again and he saw Krishna standing there, he surrendered his heart. He surrendered his life. He realized that in the darkness of ignorance, I thought that I'm great, because I happen to be the father of everyone in the universe. I happen to have created all the universe. I happen to be able to see everything all the time with my heads. He happens to live 311 trillion years by our standards. And what do we live? If you had a lifespan of 311 trillion years and you met someone who lives a mere 80 or 90 years, you would obviously feel superior to them. So Brahma, that's Brahma. Like a little firefly at night, they make light. You've seen? In the darkness, the light seems a lot. And because their eyes are so insignificant, all they see is the limits of where their light goes. So they think they're lighting up the universe. Because as far as their eyes could see, it's all lit up because of me. And then when they turn it off, it's darkness. Then they turn it on, it's light. So in darkness, the firefly can think I'm really great. But when the sun comes out at noon, the firefly doesn't make any difference at all. Compared to the sun, insignificant. And what is the sun? It's just a tiny little reflection of Krishna's supreme energy, Krishna's light. The Brahma Jyoti, the infinite light of the spiritual world, of the spiritual sky, is just the glow coming from the body of Krishna. And the sun is just a fraction of a little reflection of that. And Brahma realizes, compared to Krishna, I'm a little firefly. Not only is the firefly insignificant, but all the light that the firefly has is ultimately coming from the sun too. He truly surrendered. And he was so grateful to the Brijbasis. He could appreciate so profoundly how fortunate they are. Because of that state of consciousness, he actually saw Vrindavan. Previously, he saw Vrindavan as a beautiful place where everyone's playing with Krishna. But now that he surrendered his heart, he saw every tree as a Kalpavriksha tree. Every cow is a Kamadhenu Surabhi cow. He saw all the residents as the supreme, most fortunate, liberated personalities. He saw every grain of dust as Chintamani, more valuable than all the jewels. All the wealth of Brahmaloka and the rest of creation are not equal in value to a grain of dust in Vrindavan. How is that? By our calculation, this is not an exaggeration. Because if we have faith in that dust of Vrindavan, through that faith in that piece of dust, the supreme treasure of Prema Bhakti can awaken in our heart. If you have faith in all the jewels of this universe or Brahmaloka or all the wealth of the heavenly worlds, love of God cannot awaken by that faith. So which is more valuable? This is what Brahma is saying. Indra, he thought he was great because he is great. You know, if an ant sees a frog, the ant thinks this frog is really great. But compared to a human, the frog is very small, insignificant. And compared to a demigod, we are totally insignificant. And the king of the demigods is Indra. And we know the story when he sent that Samvartaka cloud and inundate Vrindavan with deluge of rain that can flood a major portion of the whole universe. 7-year-old little Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill with the tip of the little finger of his left hand. And Indra, in 7 days, sending hurricanes and cyclones and tornadoes and all the wind gods, and he couldn't move a single leaf from a tree. He could not uproot a single blade of grass. And all the animals on Govardhan Hill, they were happy. He couldn't even disturb them. It is described, a lion on Govardhan Hill, you know, he was right up there on top with all the rains and all the winds, but because Krishna was touching Govardhan Hill with the tip of his little finger, he was giving so much pleasure to everyone that nothing Indra could do could hurt them. The lion just looked up toward where Indra was and roared, like, who are you? And even the deers, they didn't roar. They just were eating the grasses. They couldn't care less.
How Krishna humbled Brahma and Indra.
And Indra came down to... He was so ashamed of what he did. Because he's a devotee, and sometimes devotees get illusioned. Sometimes devotees become trapped by Maya, especially due to the ego. So he went to his guru, "What should I do? I made a big offense." Guru said, "Brihaspati, you are a fool. You should go to Brahma." He went to Brahma. "What should I do?" Brahma said, "You are a fool." So this is, gurus are supposed to teach us what we're supposed to learn. And he said, "You should go to a, only a person who is very dear to Krishna can approach him on your behalf. Krishna's Govinda. He's very dear to the cows." So he went to the planet of Surabhi, the mother of the cows. And Surabhi went to Krishna with Indra behind her and said, "Please forgive him." Narada Muni, he's born of Brahma directly. Vishnu instructs Brahma, "Tene Brahma Hridaya Adakabaye." Brahma instructs his son Narada, who instructs Vyasadeva, who writes down all the Vedic literatures for us, culminating on Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada Muni, so many histories. He's in Ram's Leela. Practically every scripture, Narada Muni has a very special place. In the Puranas, Mahabharat, Ramayana. Narada Muni heard the glories of the gopis from Brinda Devi. And he wanted so much to participate in being the servant of the servant of Srimati Radharani as a gopi for the pleasure of Krishna. He went to Brahma, his guru, and received a mantra from his guru. Then he went to a place called Narada Kund near Govardhan and performed tapasya for a long time, chanting that mantra. In Purnamasi, the Yogamaya potency of Sri Krishna, who forever resides in Vrindavan, she took Narada to Kusum Srovar. On the banks of Kusum Srovar is Pushpavan, where Sri Radha and her most close gopis, Lalita, Visakha, and others, they would collect flowers. Such fragrant, beautiful flowers. To make garlands and other offerings, where they would go to Radha Kund and offer loving service with those flowers to Krishna. So Narada Muni submerged his divine body in Kusum Sarovar, and when he emerged, he had the form of Gopi, Naradiya Gopi. And he was given the service of rendering loving service as the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis of Sri Radha. Uddhava. In Dwarka, everyone exalted Uddhava
the most. Ugrasena was king, but Uddhava, the cousin brother of Krishna, was so close to Krishna. They would lay down together. They would sit together. They would walk together. They would play together. They would discuss so many subjects together. Krishna would reveal his heart to Uddhava and even ask Uddhava for advice. Out of his supreme mercy to Uddhava, Krishna sent him to Vrindavan to give a message to the gopas and the gopis. And when Uddhava saw the nature of the pure, intimate love that they had for Krishna in separation, he knew when he would return to Mathura, he would be with Krishna practically day and night. And here are these devotees who are away from Krishna for years, but he considered them the most fortunate because of the nature of their love. He prayed. He prayed to Krishna, "Let me just be a little plant that's on the ground of Vrindavan near Govardhan, so that the gopas, the gopis, the calves, the cows, the peacocks, they will all put their feet on my head. And in this way, I will be serving them all. And by their blessings, I can get a trace of their love for you." This was Uddhava's appreciation of the Vrindavan Leela. Kamadev. I don't have to explain how he affects each and every one of us. He's the source of all these desires that we have, especially lusty desires. But name and fame and all these things are lusty desires, whether they're gross or subtle. Kamadev's such a controller. His energy. And he has his bow and his arrow. And his arrows are shooting everywhere. So he wanted to test Krishna. There's a place called Madan Thera. It's just on the bank of the Yamuna River, even today in Sri Vrindavan Dham. And even the demigods, he's conquering with his arrows. So here's little Krishna crawling around as a little baby, getting all muddy from the dust of Vrindavan. Now he's playing with his friends. He's dancing with gopis. He took his most powerful of all arrows and aimed it, about to shoot it into Krishna. But when he saw Krishna, because in order to aim, you have to be looking at your target. When he saw Krishna, Krishna's beauty, Shamsundar, captivated him to such an extent. Madan is bewildering everyone from the highest planet to the lowest within this universe and the whole cosmic manifestation. But when he saw the form of Krishna, so beautiful, so wonderful, he was completely attracted. Madan Mohan. Krishna didn't even do anything. He just was present. And he bewildered the mind of Kamadev, Cupid, who actually, right on the spot, dropped his bow, dropped his arrow, and fell unconscious. Yeah. And as we said, the whole Brahma Jyoti, so many great scholars and so many great aesthetics through the yoga system for many, many lifetimes, their aim is to just be a little particle entering into the Brahma Jyoti. And the Brahma Jyoti is just the effulgence, the glow of the body of Govinda. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam, even Mahavishnu wants to see Krishna. And at Paita, near Govardhan, when Krishna was hiding from gopis during their Ras Lila, he was standing there, he was sitting actually, and gopis came to him, so to disguise himself, he took the form of Narayan. Actually Narayan. This is amazing. He was actually Narayan with the full-fledged opulences of Narayan. Four arms holding all of the symbols of Narayan. And the gopis saw him. What would you and me if Narayan was actually right? Very awesome. They bowed down to Narayan and only had one question. Did you see where Krishna went? Narayan's forearms that way. They bowed down again and ran to find Krishna. This is Vrindavan. And when Srimati Radharani came to Narayan, she asked, where is Krishna? He tried to do the same thing, but in the presence of her love, two of his arms fell off. They didn't exactly fell off, they just disappeared. And he could not be anyone but Krishna, conquered by the love of his devotee. So as we hear about Krishna's appearance in this world, let us appreciate who is Krishna. He has appeared on Janmashtami, especially to attract our hearts. And as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna has given the ultimate emphasis on remembering Krishna. As the son of Nanda, Sri Nanda Nandana, Yashoda Nanda in Vrindavan. But following in the footsteps of the great souls, not cheaply. We can't just become a gopi or a gopa. We could imagine it, but that doesn't even bring us much closer. It's through our surrender. It's through truly purifying ourselves through our service as the servant of the servant of the servant, and by truly purifying ourselves by eagerness to hear about Krishna and to chant his holy names. Satatam kirtayanto mam, Krishna says, always chant my names. Man manabhava mad bhakto, always remember me. Are we able to do that? Kirtaniya sadahari, constantly chanting Krishna's names. We could chant, but we're thinking so many things sometimes. And then we're doing, are we constantly chanting Krishna's names? That's only possible by Krishna's grace. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibase ishnuna. Amani namana dena kirtaniya sadhari. That grace comes to us when we're truly aspiring to be even more humble than a blade of grass, even more forgiving and tolerant than a tree, devoid of any sense of false prestige, eager to appreciate and give respect to others, and not expect it or demand it ourselves. When we're truly valuing this character as our goal, then Krishna reveals himself in his holy names, and we could chant constantly. So in this spirit, let us discuss Janmashtami. Sukadeva Goswami begins the 10th canto. It was a time in this world where there was such demoniac people who were exploiting, filled with arrogance and envy and lust and greed, always angry at anything that got in their way from enjoying being controllers and proprietors. And they took the roles, many of them, as kings. It was a terrible situation. Where innocent people were so much being exploited. The resources, the environment of Mother Earth was being polluted and exploited by these people. So Bhumi Devi, Mother Earth herself, she approached Lord Brahma, taking the form of a cow. And she pleaded her condition. How her innocent children are being exploited, and how all of her resources are being selfishly manipulated. And these demoniac kings and everybody else, they were constantly having wars and fighting against each other over who's the proprietor, who's the controller, who's the enjoyer. She was crying, incessantly crying. She was in so much pain due to her compassion for all others. And she prayed to Brahma to help. Brahma took Bhumi Devi to the shore of the ocean of milk. Along with them, the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva. At the banks of the ocean of milk, they faced toward the island where Kshirodakshayi Vishnu resides, called Svetadvip. They offered their prayers, especially Purusha Shukta, which is a prayer that the devatas pray to invoke the Lord's compassion upon them and all the world. They offered their prayers, they performed their pujas, they prayed, but nothing happened. Then Lord Brahma, the original guru, he sat down in meditation. In a mood of compassion to Bhumi Devi and all of her children, Lord Brahma meditated on Vishnu. Prayerful meditation. Brahma heard a message. Then he shared the message with all the demigods. The message was that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is going to appear, take birth within the world, within the Yadu dynasty. And he is directing all the demigods to also, to prepare for his arrival and to assist him in his pastimes, to appear within the Yadu dynasty. And Baladev, his first expansion, will also appear to perform their leelas. After proclaiming this message, Brahma went back to his abode. Srimad Bhagavatam describes that Surasena was the king of Mathura, and he was the leader of the Yadu dynasty. And he had a son named Vasudev. Vasudev married the daughter of Devaka, Devaki. And during their marriage, it was so auspicious. Devaka gave so much charity and so much gifts to Vasudev's family. It was glorious. The son of the king was getting married, the previous king. The son of Ugrasena, who was then acting as the king of the Yadu dynasty, Kamsa, he was so affectionate toward his sister in his own way. He wanted to make her happy. And according to the tradition, because the bride is leaving her home, she's going to her husband's house, so she's going to feel a little uncomfortable. So the brother actually escorts her so she can feel very nice. And Devaka gave in charity also so many, her friends went with her. There was such a sensitivity in the Vedic culture, there's such a sensitivity for people's hearts. There's a whole culture based around it. How to inspire everyone's hearts. That's the principle of Varnashram Dharma. Everyone, according to our place, our time, our situation, our nature, we're encouraged to bring the best out of each other. And such subtleties in how to have children and how to be married and how to have a family and how to be a sadhu. Everything is very, very carefully organized through tradition. So Kamsa became the chariot driver for Devaki and Vasudev. And as he's happily taking them to Vasudev's house, a voice spoke from the sky. Kamsa, you are a fool. The eighth child of Devaki will kill you. Don't clap. One little message, and Kamsa's whole mind was distorted. He went from a loving brother who just wanted to make his sister happy. As soon as there was a threat to his own sense gratification and well-being, he exploded with uncontrollable anger. He turned to Devaki, a young, sweet little girl who's his own cousin's sister. He grabbed her by the hair, drew his mighty sword, and was on the verge of severing her head. But Vasudev, because during marriage, the husband vows to protect the wife. And out of love, natural, spontaneous love for Devaki, He came between Devaki and Kamsa. He was willing to put his life on the line to try to protect his beloved. And he began to speak, trying to convince Kamsa, don't do this. He said, Kamsa, you are very famous. You have such a high reputation. If you kill your own sister on the day of her marriage, when she's totally helpless, your reputation will be destroyed forever. Stop this. But that didn't work. He got philosophical. He said, death is inevitable for everyone. All of us, the soul, is transcendental. The soul is eternal, and it's taking one body to another body and another body. What are these bodies? They're just temporary little places that the soul, for a small amount of time, is residing. Just like a traveler is walking, he takes a step. And then his other foot goes in front. And then his previous foot comes off the ground and takes another step and another step and another step. In the same way, we're taking birth after birth after birth within this material world. The little worm is crawling from one leaf to another leaf. As soon as you go to one leaf, you have to give up the previous leaf. That's what birth and death is. It's inevitable. We're all going to die. The real question is, what do we do with our life? If you do this terrible, heinous deed, you will incur such dreadful karma. You will have to suffer so bad. It's better to live with dharma, to prepare for a good next life when the next step comes. He explained the nature of the transmigration of the soul. He explained the nature of karma. But Kamsa, he couldn't hear philosophy. He was too obsessed with protecting his selfish interests. At that time, Vasudev, he made a promise. Kamsa, you have no danger from your sister. The danger is from the eighth child. I promise you, every child that is born from Devaki, I will present to you. Kamsa knew that Vasudev would never, ever tell a lie. As cruel and wicked, as envious as he was, he could appreciate the truthfulness of Vasudev. He knew if he says this, he will do it under all circumstances. He freed them. Sounds auspicious. It's very auspicious. Because in this setting, Narada Muni came to visit Kamsa. Now please understand, Narada Muni is one of the prominent acharyas of our sampradaya. He's the well-wisher of all living beings. Whatever he does is for the pleasure of Krishna. He wanted to accelerate Krishna's coming to this world out of compassion for all living beings. And he knew the inner truths of everything that was about to happen. So Narada Muni told Kamsa, you know, I was recently traveling around the universe and I heard the demigods. They were all, this is some time back, they were all going to take birth in the Yadu dynasty. And you know the demigods, they're your enemies. And Vishnu promised them that he would be coming to take birth as the child of Vasudeva and Devaki for the purpose of killing you. So I wouldn't trust any of those children. In fact, in your previous life, you were Kalanemi, and Vishnu killed you. And now he's going to come back as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki to kill you again. I just wanted to give you this information. And then Narada Muni, Narada Muni Bhajayi Vinaradi Karamana Name, chanting the names of Krishna. He traveled again to another universe. Kamsa was outraged. Arrested Vasudeva and Devaki, put them in a dungeon, and had their legs shackled with chains. Actually, I'm going to go back a little. Before Narada Muni came, they actually had one child, Vasudeva and Devaki. And Vasudeva presented the child to Kamsa and said, "Here's my child, I promised." And Kamsa was so overwhelmed. He said, "Oh, you're so honest. Take this little boy back, this little baby, and raise him nicely. I'm only concerned with the eighth child." So Vasudeva was not really convinced, but he took him back. Then Narada Muni came. And then Kamsa shackled them in chains, put them in prison, and smashed the child against a rock to death. A second child was born. A third child. Six children were born in the prison house. Kamsa slaughtered to death each and every one of them. Now you may ask, why did Narada Muni do that? He understood who these six sons were. Long before, Marichi had six sons. And they criticized Lord Brahma. And obviously, they were very powerful people, very intellectual people, sons of Marichi. They thought they knew what was happening. They saw what appeared to them to be a transgression of Brahma. So they were critical toward him. The result is they would have to take birth and be killed by their own father. The sons of Marichi became the sons of Kalanemi. Then in another birth, they were the grandchildren of Hiranyakashipu. I think you all know who he is. Grandsons of Hiranyakashipu, they were very, very powerful people. They went out to perform tapasya to get blessings from Lord Brahma. That's what Hiranyakashipu did too. And Lord Brahma appeared to them, and they asked for the blessing that nobody could kill us. Hiranyakashipu was so envious. He was so arrogant. He could not tolerate the thought that his grandchildren went and approached Brahma without his permission. Of course, because of their benediction, they couldn't be killed by anyone created by Brahma. which includes Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu, curse them that you will be killed by your own father. Kala Nemi will become Kamsa, and he will kill you in your next birth. So those six children of Devaki, they represent lust, anger, greed, envy, arrogance, and illusion. The six enemies of bhakti. And they are born of Marichi, who represents the mind. Devaki represents bhakti. Kamsa represents fear of the allurements of material nature. Devaki was afraid of Kamsa. And similarly, when a devotee has proper fear of material existence, in that state, we take shelter of Krishna. It doesn't mean we live in fear. It means we understand only Krishna can save us. Only Krishna can save our lives. Only Krishna can save our spiritual advancement. Only Krishna can save us from Maya. So Devaki, she was taking shelter of Krishna. The bhakta takes shelter of Krishna because the bhakta knows the power of Maya. Daivi hishu guno mayi mama maya duratyaya. Mama ivamye prabhadyante mayam etatarantite. And when we take shelter of Krishna, then these six enemies are destroyed. And then what happens? After six children were killed by Kamsa, Shankarshan, Lord Balaram, appeared within the womb of Devaki. When Balaram, who's none different than Krishna himself, his first expansion entered into Devaki's womb, she became so happy. He's Balarama. Rama means one who gives everyone happiness. Balaram's the source of Mahavishnu. And now he's within the womb of Devaki. She's filled with bliss having this association. But at the same time, in her motherly spirit, she was so afraid Kamsa will kill him. It was at that time that Krishna, in this spiritual world, he called for Yogamaya. He told Yogamaya that it is my order to you to transfer the child Anantadev Shesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of his original mother, Rohini. And then I am going to personally enter into the womb of Devaki, and you should become the daughter of Yashodamayi, Brajeshwari, the queen of Vrindavan, the wife of Nanda Maharaj in Gokul Mahavan. Yogamaya, with folded palms, she said yes, and circumambulated Lord Krishna. Jiva Goswami explains the birth of Krishna. According to Haribamsa and the realizations of the scriptures and the acharyas from another perspective. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, they cite Jiva Goswami's explanation from the Gopal Champu. May I make some attempt to describe? We're going to go back a little. There was a great king of the Yadu dynasty. His name was Devamida. He married a Kshatriya wife and a Vaishya wife. From his Kshatriya wife, a child was born named Surasena. And he became the king of the Yadu dynasty in the Kshatriya race. From his Vaishya wife, Parjanya was born. He made his residence in Gokul, Mahavan. And he was the leader of the cowherd community. He had such divine transcendental qualities. It is described by Jiva Goswami. He was the king of the gopas. He had pure, unalloyed love in every aspect of his life by worshiping Lord Vishnu. He was charitable and glorious as Prahlad Maharaj, as truthful as Dhruva Maharaj, as magnanimous as Prithu Maharaj. To his enemies, he was like Bhishma. To his friends, he was as magnanimous as Lord Shiva. He was as exalted as Brahma. And he had a beautiful effulgence of pure devotion. All the gopas wanted to follow him. Not because he wanted power or influence, but they just loved him. It was natural. He had five sons: Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sunanda, and Nandana. Of the five, Nanda Maharaj was the middle son. He was most glorious. He was affectionate to everyone. He was perfectly gentle. Sumukha, a great cowherd man, his daughter was Yashoda. Parjanya arranged for, and Sumukha, they arranged for Yashoda and Nanda to be married. They became the life and soul of all of Gokul. After some days, Parjanya wanted to retire from his service and coronate his eldest son, Upananda, to be the king of Mahavan. The ceremony was taking place. Vasudev came, Gargamuni came, so many personalities of exalted character. And after Upananda was being coronated as king, Upananda stood up and performed the same coronation to his younger brother, Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj was so humble, he just kind of withdrew.
At that time, in front of everyone in the assembly, Upananda embraced Nanda Maharaj, crowned him as king, and he proclaimed to everyone, I have done this with much thought. Nanda, my brother, is an ocean of virtues. My name, Upananda, means to be the assistant of Nanda. He has conquered everyone with his love. He's conquered me with his love. There is no one who could be a better fit servant than Nanda Maharaj. I will be his minister and assist him. When he said like this, the demigod showered flowers. Upananda, as the elder brother, was the assistant minister giving advice to Nanda Maharaj whenever Nanda Maharaj asked. But Nanda Maharaj always felt that I'm the service of Upananda. In fact, Nanda Maharaj was a loving servant to everyone. Under his rule in Gokul, what kind of rule? He wasn't making laws or exacting taxes. He was a cowherd man who had so much love in his heart that everyone simply wanted to follow whatever he wanted. That was Gokul. The Brijabasis were satisfied in every way, except one. That as years passed, Nanda and Yashoda had no child. They loved their leaders with such intimate, genuine affection that his happiness was their happiness. Yashoda Mai has no child. How could we be happy? That was the reciprocation. Nanda Maharaj was living for them. They were living for him. Upananda and the other cowherd men, they called the best of Brahmins to perform yajna after yajna to somehow or other induce a child to be born from Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. There were no child. It was at that time that Nanda Maharaj, he told Yashoda Mai that I had a dream. In this dream, there was a beautiful little baby. His complexion was like a blue lotus flower. His eyes were like beautiful blossomed lotus petals. His smile was enchanting the whole universe. He was playing. I saw this little child sitting on your lap, drinking the milk from your breast. Yashoda Mai said, I have been having the exact same dream, but I was too shy to tell anyone. Yashoda Mai said, actually, Nanda Maharaj said, to have a child like this, all these yajnas will never be successful. Because these yajnas are karmakanda. They bring heavenly desires. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, intimately, will give us the opportunity to have a child like we're seeing in our dream. Yashoda Mai said, in pure loving devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should perform the Dwadasi Vrata for one full year, which they did very carefully. After 1 year, Lord Narayan appeared simultaneously in a vision to Nanda and Yashoda. Narayan, he said, do not be troubled, because the object of your parental love, the object of your heart's vision, will soon be your son. He's only waiting this time to increase your love. This child is born kalpa after kalpa as your son. Previously, you were Drona and Dara, Aditi and Kashyapa. This child will soon fulfill all of your desires. Both Nanda and Yashoda were filled with joy. Meanwhile, in Mathura, Krishna appeared within the mind of Vasudev. From the mind of Vasudev, he entered into his heart. From Vasudev's heart, he was transferred to the heart of Devaki. Devaki became pregnant. She was filled with joy. The demigods, knowing that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had now made his residence in the heart. Actually, let me go back a little. Because all these different versions, trying to harmonize them, sometimes takes a little patience. Rohini, when she was three, we're going back now. When Rohini Devi, who was a wife of Vasudev, as well as Devaki, she was 3 months pregnant. At that time, so many of the Yadus were fleeing and hiding and going to different places because they could not tolerate the violent rule of Kamsa. They were going into different kingdoms, into different districts. Some of them were hiding in caves. And Vasudev, to protect his wife Rohini, sent her to be under the care of his dearmost best friend, Nanda Maharaj, in Gokul Mahavan. She was secretly brought by horse. Balaram was in her womb, 3 months pregnant.